The Golden Age of Radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the Golden Age of Radio, Ian Southern stars in The Adventures of Maisie from 1950. We'll also hear an episode of Dr. Tim Detective from 1948 with The Mystery of Guest in Number 2. Stay tuned for the Golden Age of Radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, an episode of Dr. Tim Detective from 1948 with The Mystery of Guest in Number 2. Right now, Ann Southern stars in The Adventures of Maisie from 1950 as WMKY presents The Golden Age of Radio.
Hiya, babe. Say, how about a ouch!
Does that answer your question, buddy?
The Adventures of Maisie, starring Ann Southern. You all remember Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's famous Maisie pictures. In just a moment, you'll hear Maisie in radio, starring the same glamorous star you all went to see and loved on the screen, Ann Southern. Now, here's Ann Southern as Maisie.
Yep, I'm Maisie, like the man said. Maisie Revere from Brooklyn. I've been around a lot, and believe me, I face more of life than Portia. But I'm just one of the forgotten people in this world, like Whistler's father. By profession, I'm in show business, but right now I'm not working very much at it. Funny, though, when you're broke, there's only three times when you're really minded. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Oh, yes, and when your hotel bill is due, which incidentally is today. I owe a month's bill on the tiny little room I took. Room? Looks more like a tea bag with walls. But I do owe the rent, and the hotel manager, Mr. Walters, is getting just a little impatient with me. I can tell that by the way he keeps changing the lock on my door. Also, I'm getting tired of climbing into my room through the transom, so... Well, there's only one way out of this mess, and I'm taking it.
Hey, good evening, Miss Revere.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Walters. I was just going for a little walk.
How nice. Do you always walk down the fire escape, Miss Revere?
Oh, is this the fire escape?
Oh, didn't you know?
No. I thought this was the staircase to the lobby. You see, I know the janitor always washes the staircase at night, and I figured this is where he puts it out to dry.
Yes. Well, that's a natural mistake, Miss Revere.
Is it? I mean, yes, it is.
Yes, Miss Revere. So you were just going for a casual stroll.
Yeah, it's such a nice night.
And you decided to take your suitcase with you.
Yes. In case it suddenly gets cold, I might want to change into something warmer. Well, you know how it is, Mr. Walters.
Yes, I know exactly how it is, Miss Revere. Mm-hmm. I hate to bring this up at 2 o'clock in the morning out here on the fire escape. But you've been a guest at our little hostelry for 4 weeks now, and you owe us a matter of $96.
Well,
That, you must agree, is a lot of money.
Well, on the contrary, Mr. Walters, I think for 4 weeks it is very reasonable.
You do?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm so glad. And now, Miss Revere, I feel silly about asking this, but when do you intend paying your bill?
Well, Mr. Walters, the reason I haven't paid...
I don't believe that lie.
How do you know you don't believe it? You haven't even heard the lie yet. I mean...
Hey, come with me, Miss Revere.
Where are you taking me, Mr. Walters?
Back into the hotel to work out your bill.
Oh, not as an elevator operator, I hope. I can't stand height. I even get dizzy when I lick an airmail stamp. I'll get the money for you, Mr. Walters. My agent's looking around like crazy.
Hey, Miss Revere, you're going to work out your debt to our hotel as room clerk. Night room clerk.
Oh, but I can't, Mr. Walters. I like to sleep nights. I can't sleep days. It's too light.
Well, close your eyes and it'll be dark.
Oh.
Night room clerk you are, and night room clerk you'll be until you wipe out your debt to our hotel.
I have no experience as a room clerk.
Well, it's quite simple, Miss Revere. All you have to do is say no to everything.
Oh.
You certainly know how to do that.
I should. I've been doing that since the first time I put on high heels.
Oh, pardon me, Miss Revere. Hello, Hotel Mercury. Mr. Walters, the night manager, speaking. Who? Oh, heavens to Betsy. Oh, yes. Yes, Your Highness. Oh, of course, Your Majesty. The very best, Your Highness.
Who was that?
His Royal Highness, Baron Krabotchnik of Georgia. Hey, bellboy, front, hey, post haste.
Krabotchnik? That don't sound like no southern name.
Hey, Miss Revere, the Baron comes from Georgia, one of the countries in the Balkans. It's part of Russia.
Naturally.
Yes, Mr. Wallace, you rang? Oh, howdy, Miss Revere.
Hiya, Jimmy. How's Tips been lately?
Well, there'll be much more, Jimmy, when Baron Krabotchnik gets here. Oh, just to think that soon we'll have honest-to-goodness royalty staying at our humble little inn. I'm so thrilled I could just swoon.
Oh, Baron Krabotchnik, huh? Say, I've been reading about that guy. He's got more money than Jack Benny says he hasn't.
Yeah, I recall reading the name in the newspapers. He's the fellow that just married that American showgirl.
Yeah.
Please, this is no time for idle chatter.
Oh.
Hey, Jimmy, I want you to see that the housekeeper has the royal bridal suite ready for the Baron and Baroness.
The royal bridal suite?
Yeah, the one with the window.
I wonder why he wants to stay... Oh, say, maybe the Baron's one of those jerks what don't like no publicity.
Exactly, Jimmy. He expressly mentioned that that's the reason for staying here. He just can't stand newspapers.
Well, then it's a good thing he ain't going to be in my room. That's what the walls are papered with.
Well, Miss Revere, I must rush downtown and tell Mr. Covey, the owner of the hotel, the glad tidings, that we're having a royal bride and groom here. Oh, and Miss Revere.
Yes?
If the royal honeymooners arrive while I'm gone, just show them right up to the bridal suite.
All right.
They're traveling incognito and probably won't give their right name.
Oh, yes.
Say, Miss Revere, did I hear right?
Mm-hmm.
You the room clerk now?
Yeah, Jimmy. I'm working my way through a hotel bill.
Oh.
Well, you better go tell the housekeeper to air out the royal bridal suite for the Baron and Mrs. Baron.
Oh, sure, Miss Revere, I'll do it. Say, a man and woman just come in. They look awfully happy.
Probably never stopped at this hotel before. Well, I better get my sneer ready. Got to look real hotel clerky, you know. See you later, Jimmy.
Uh-huh.
There's the desk over there, Liebchen. Come on, do not be afraid.
Oh, I'm just tired, darling. We've been all over town looking for a room. Gosh, this is an awful way to spend your honeymoon night. Wandering around town.
Oh, no, do not cry, my little wife. I have a feeling that at this hotel a room they will have.
Golly, they've just got to give us a room here. They've just got to. I just couldn't spend my honeymoon night alone in my room at the... Why?
No, Liebchen, you'll never be alone anymore. Remember, now you are Mrs. Johann Schmidt.
It's now John Smith, honey, not Johann Schmidt. Remember?
Oh, yeah. Keep forgetting. I'm now a real American with a real American name. You were very wise insisting that I change it legally, my darling.
And that'll make it easier for you to get a job, darling.
Uh-huh.
Now that we were married, who can tell? Pretty soon we may have a... to support.
Yeah. We must get a room, and we will. We owe it to our little one. Clark!
Okay, Sonny, you don't have to yell. I just ducked under the desk for a moment to fix my garter.
Oh, I didn't see you.
You were not supposed to. Now, what can I do for you?
We would like a room. You see, we...
Oh, honeymooners.
Yeah, and we would like a place to stay for the night. It is very important.
Well, I'm sorry, folks, but the hotel is filled up and...
Filled?
Well, I'm sorry, folks, but you know how it is.
No, we do not know how it is. We've just been married.
Oh.
I mean, miss, I demand that you accommodate us.
You demand?
Yes, we demand.
Yeah, we demand the bridal suite.
Oh, darling, the bridal suite? But that's so expensive.
Bah, money. What is money?
Well, frankly, I wouldn't know. I ain't come across any in a long time.
You must be him.
Him? No, I'm not him. I'm us. I mean, me. Now, do we get the bridal tree?
Oh, yes, Your Highness.
Highness?
No, miss, you're making some mistake. My name is...
John Smith.
Yeah, John Smith.
Oh, Mr. and Mrs. John Smith, naturally. Sign here, Your Royal...
Miss.
Oh, yeah, Your Royal Smithness.
Miss, what I wanted to say is that John Smith is not my real name.
Of course not. It never is.
Miss, I don't know who it is that you think we are, but whoever you think we are...
Darling, I'm so sleepy.
We are.
Sure, sure, don't worry. Nobody will ever know, Your Highness. If you say you're Mr. and Mrs. John Smith, well, then you're Mr. and Mrs. John Smith. Right?
Right.
Right. Well, here's a pen and here's the register.
What do I do now?
Right.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Front.
Yes, what is it, Miss Weaver?
They're here, Jimmy. The couple Mr. Walters was expecting.
Yeah.
Jimmy?
Yeah. Yes.
Show John Smith and Minnie Haha here to the bridal suite.
Oh, yes, sure. This way, folks. I mean, you're royal, folks.
Thank you. Come, darling. Good night, miss. Thank you, and we would not like to be disturbed.
Oh, don't worry. In case there's a fire, we'll put it out nice and quietly with soft water. Good evening. I mean, good morning, Hotel Mercury.
Oh, well, let me talk to Maisie Revere, honey.
This is Maisie Revere. With whom have I got the pleasure?
This is Hyman, your agent.
Well, well. So it's nothing doing today. Don't call us. We'll call you Herman.
Well, I'm calling you now, honey. You open tomorrow night at the Rialto Theater.
A booking? A real honest-to-goodness booking? You mean it, Herman?
Maisie, you ever know me to tell a lie?
Answer the question, Herman.
Yeah, it's all set. If you click on this one, baby... Well, I ain't promising nothing, you mind you, but it might mean the palace.
The palace? In New York?
No, Boise, Idaho.
Oh. Say, Herman, how much am I getting?
Well, baby, things are pretty tough, you know. You'll have to take a little less than you usually get.
I didn't think there was anything less than that. Well, okay, Herm, I'll be there. I still got my costume and my suitcase all cleaned and ready for just in case.
Okay, baby, and knock him dead.
Well, Miss Revere, I told the boss the good news. Oh, and you should have seen his face when he found out that Baron and Baroness Krabotchnik are going to honeymoon at his hotel.
Not a going to, Mr. Walters. Ah.
Ah?
Mm-hmm. They've just gone up to the bridal suite. Oh, gee, they're a cute couple.
Well, cute is hardly the word for it. The Baroness is supposed to be the most striking blonde in this country.
Yeah, the way she giggled every time she... blonde?
Yes, practically platinum... Yeah, Miss Revere, didn't you?
Well, the one I sent up was a brunette.
A brunette? Well, in this morning's paper, she was a decided blonde.
Well, I guess in the evening she decided on another color.
Well, perhaps. Women are that way sometimes.
Yeah, because I couldn't understand what she ever saw in a little shrimp like the Baron.
Well, you never can tell. Shrimp. The Baron is 6'5".
Well, some shrimps are taller than others.
Oh, no. No, you didn't. It can't be.
Well, I'm afraid it can. But gosh, they acted a little like they were the real Baron and Mrs. Baron. His accent, his demanding manner. Gee, I'm sorry, Mr. Walters.
You'll be quite a whole lot more sorry, Miss Revere. That bridal suite is reserved for the real Baron and Baroness Krabotchnik.
Well,
get those two imposters out of that suite, or instead of letting you work off your bill, I'll attach all your luggage.
Oh, but you can't do that, Mr. Walters. My costume is in that suitcase, and I've got to open tomorrow night with my act.
Miss Revere, I'm afraid you'll have to go on without that costume.
But I can't. It ain't that kind of an act.
That is my final decision, Miss Revere.
Oh, Mr. Walters. Throwing a pair of honeymooners out is, well, it's a dirty trick.
Well, are you going to do it?
Yeah, chum. As soon as I can think of a trick that's dirty enough.
The Adventures of Maisie, starring Ann Southern, will continue in just a moment.
Thank you.
Maisie.
Here we are, Miss Revere. 12th floor. Bridal suite is just down the hall.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Well, what's the matter, Miss Revere? Elevator ride a little too fast for you?
Yeah. You barely gave me time to fasten my safety belt when we were up here.
Oh, I'm sorry. Anything else I can do for you?
Yeah. Next time you come up, bring my shoes.
I mean about getting that fake Baron and Baroness out of the bridal suite. You ain't got long before the real Royal Krabotchniks get here, you know.
Yeah, that's why I gotta work fast and nasty.
See, that singing job at the theater tomorrow night means an awful lot to you, don't it, Miss Revere?
Yeah, and I just have to get those honeymooners out of that suite, or Mr. Walters won't let me have my costume.
Well, lots of luck, Miss Revere. If you need any help evicting that couple, just holler.
Well, if you hear any hollering, Jimmy, it'll be those honeymooners.
Well, my own little wife, here we are, alone in our own little bridal suite at last.
Don't you want to kiss your bride, honey?
Such a question. Come, Liebchen. Snuggle closer to your husband.
Ooh. How's this, darling?
Oh, wunderbar. Wunderschön. Oh, my little flower, do I love... What is it?
The room clerk. There's a very important question I must ask you.
Oh, fine.
Just a minute. What a hotel this is.
Well, hello, folksies. Comfortable?
We were. But what is the important question you wanted to ask?
What would you kids like for tomorrow's breakfast? Some nice 3-minute eggs, perchance?
No, we just want to be left alone.
Yeah, good night, miss, please.
Oh, all right, then. Good night.
Such a question. At the time like this, food we want?
Darling, I'm lonesome.
Oh, thank you, Liebchen. Better now?
Yeah.
What is now?
How about a nice steak?
All right, anything to be left alone. This is our honeymoon. We have 2 steaks for breakfast, but tomorrow...
And without potatoes. Good night.
Good night.
Oh, no. She's gone for good.
Yes. Alone at last. My husband.
Fine.
We don't have any potatoes. You'll have to take those steaks without something else.
Get out!
Okay, okay. Gosh, you don't have to get sore just because we happen to run out of potatoes. Good night.
Good night!
Well, such temper. Good night.
Liebchen, I think for good she's gone now.
Thank goodness. Alone at last.
Oh, come, my wife. Kiss me.
What did you say, darling?
He said, kiss me.
Oh, this is a terrible hotel.
Yeah, I don't see how anybody can stand staying here.
Neither can I. Miss, we are going to get out of here.
Good.
Tomorrow. Good night.
Well.
I know I said I'd like to help you get them Smiths out of there, Miss Revere, but well, this idea sounds sort of risky.
I know, Jimmy, but gosh, this is an emergency.
It is?
Yes.
Well, okay, Miss Revere, okay, if you're sure Mr. Walters won't get wise.
Well, how can he? He's down at the desk waiting for the real Baron and Baroness. You have the key to Mr. Walters' room, don't you?
No, but I can get it from the janitor down in the basement.
Good. Mr. Walters' room is right next to the bridal suite, you know.
Yeah.
And as soon as we get into Mr. Walters' room...
We start making the racket that drives them phonies out of the bridal suite.
Yeah, yeah. And we've got just a few minutes before the real Baron and his bride get here. And, Jimmy, I know you're taking a big risk, but I'll help you out when you get in trouble.
Oh, but I never get into trouble.
That's silly. Anybody that has anything to do with me always has trouble. Come on, let's get that key, Jimmy.
I'm terribly sorry, Baron and Baroness Krabotchnik. It was a terrible, terrible mistake about the bridal suite. I don't know what to say.
Say, in my country you would say nothing. You would be shot.
The whole thing is ridiculous. This is a honeymoon. We can't just walk the streets all night.
Do not cry out your beautiful eyes, my little blinds. We shall have a place to stay tonight.
Well, your highness, you can always sleep in the lobby.
We want a room. I demand that we be given the royal bridal suite. Throw those peasants out.
But I can't do that, your highness. This is a democracy.
Then throw those democrats out.
Surely you can give the couple occupying our suite some other room to stay.
But, your highness, every room in the hotel is occupied.
Oh, just a moment, your highness. A nasty little thought just came to my mind.
Nasty, schmasty, all we want is that suite. For me and my little Boblochka.
Yes, Boris. So tired.
Quick, peasant, before my bride falls asleep. Do already.
I'm buzzing the bridal suite now, your highness. Oh, there they are now. Oh, good morning, Mr. Smith. This is the night manager.
Oh, please, sir, such language.
Well, Mr. Smith, it seems by some mistake you were put in the bridal suite reserved for the Baron and Baroness Krabotchnik.
Do not be gentle with the peasants, peasant. Kindness does not work with the lower classes. Take them out and shoot them.
You can't take people out in this country and just shoot them because they're poor, Boris.
You come?
Yes, I know, Mr. Smith, but would you mind if I moved you to another room, room 1412? Yes, it's vacant. Oh, thank you very much. Yes, you can go right there, and I'll meet you at 1412 with the key.
It is fixed, no?
Yes, the bridal suite is yours, your highness. You can go right up.
Oh, Boris, I'm so glad. Come kiss me quick.
I'll show you the way.
I know the way. I have kissed women before.
The room's empty. Mr. Walters must still be down at the desk.
Oh, please, Miss Revere, not so loud. We'll disturb the people next door.
Well, that's the idea, Jimmy. Don't you remember?
Yeah, but I keep trying to forget.
Okay, now, Jimmy, start the yelling.
Okay. This is a fine thing. I come home from a hard day's work.
No, no, louder, Jimmy.
Okay.
Come on.
This is a fine thing. I come home from a hard day's work at the pool room, and what do I get? No supper.
Well, a bum wants supper. He wants supper.
Now, wait a minute.
Quiet, there's one more. He wants supper. Why don't you go out and get a job?
A job? A job? I've been working on a job for 3 years.
Yeah, what kind of a job?
I don't know. I'm still working on it.
Papa, don't hit Mom over the head with me again. Use the chair this time.
Quiet in there, you.
It's working.
Boris, come back. I'm lonesome.
We got him riled up, Jimmy. Keep going.
Okay. A fine wife you are. Why, you ain't never washed my shirt.
How could I? Always wearing it.
That's no excuse.
Quiet in there. Stop that shouting.
Who's shouting? Can a woman carry on an ordinary conversation with her own husband?
Oh, shut up, Junior. Be quiet and drink your beer.
Shut up. You too, Junior. Go play with a nice stick of dynamite Mama bought you.
Dynamite? A fine thing. We ain't got food in the joint, and you spend good money on toys.
Well, at least it keeps them off the street. Don't pound on our door so hard. I got noise, you know.
Can't you be quiet, lowlifers?
Lowlifers? Sam throw this bum out.
Bum! Do you know who I am? I am the Baron Krabotchka.
I don't care if...
The Baron? You know who I am?
No.
Thank goodness.
Uh-oh. Look, your Baroness, I can explain, I think.
To the manager, you'll have to explain why you are keeping awake my bride and me next door.
Oh.
I am just fresh married on my honeymoon. Must you fight at 2 o'clock in the morning?
Oh, but, Your Highness, we thought... Well, Jimmy, say something to the Baron.
Sure, Baron. I hope you and your wife will be very happy.
Happy I will be if you two get out of here.
Oh, gladly, Your Highness. But you're blocking the way. You wouldn't want us to jump out of the window.
Would you?
Say, what's all this rumpus about? Miss Revere, what are you doing here?
Me?
Oh, well, I thought, I wanted to get rid of the Smith. And,
yes, sir. You see, Mr. Walters, Weave.
Yes.
That is she.
Any questions, Mr. Walters?
Miss Revere, I'll talk to you alone. Please go back to your room, Your Highness, and I promise you won't be disturbed anymore. And tell your bride I'm awfully sorry.
Tell her you're sorry. You expect me to wake her up just for that? Good night, you Vladnoshkins.
Vladnoshkins? What does that mean?
I don't know, but we probably are. Mr. Walters, all this wasn't Jimmy's fault. He just came in here to try to stop me.
Oh, Miss Revere. Hey,
never mind, Jimmy. Miss Revere, if you had bothered to check with me, you would have found out that I'd transferred the Smiths to another room.
Oh, then it's all right. Oh, gosh, I'm so tired I could go to sleep on a park bench.
I'm glad you said that, Miss Revere. You may have to.
May have to?
Yes, you see, I gave your room to the Smiths.
Oh, no.
In just a moment, we shall return to the adventures of Maisie.
Here I am at 3 in the morning walking the streets in search of a nice quiet hotel where they don't ask embarrassing questions like, can you pay for a room? Anyway, I got my suitcase and my costume back. But if I don't get some sleep, I ain't saying what kind of an act I'm going to put on tomorrow at the theater. I'm so sleepy that my act will be a novelty. It'll probably be the first time an audience has ever heard Take Me Out to the Ball Game yawn. Oh, well, I ain't exactly broke. I still got enough to go to an all-night movie. Well, here goes. Heads, it's the Apollo. Tails, the Gem. It rolled right down the sewer. With my luck, wouldn't you just know something like that would happen with my last order?
Just heard The Adventures of Maisie, starring Ann Southern. Maisie was written by Arthur Phillips. Original music was composed and conducted by Harry Zimmerman. Supporting cast included Loreen Tuttle, Hans Conried, Frank Nelson, Sidney Miller, Mary Stewart, Harry Bartell, and Alan Reed. Jack McCoy speaking.
Today, there's a continuing lineup of great radio shows on this NBC station with a variety of entertainment features. Later this afternoon, Best Plays will present The Philadelphia Story, Philip Barry's highly successful comedy of manners. Starring in The Philadelphia Story on Best Plays will be Betty Furness, Joan Alexander, and Myron McCormick. In the music department this afternoon, you're invited to keep tuned for a full-hour concert from world-famed Hollywood Bowl. Today's concert will feature Dorothy Warren Scholl, Jan Pierce, and Igor Gorin. Another highly entertaining program today on NBC will be broadcast from Meredith Wilson's Music Room. Meredith will have lovely Esther Williams as his special guest, and I'm sure you'll enjoy hearing them talk about music, swimming, and anything else that happens to pop up in the course of their informal conversation. So for the finest in radio entertainment, be sure to keep tuned to the NBC Radio Network.
You are listening to the Golden Age of Radio with an episode of The Adventures of Maisie, starring Ann Southern, first broadcast on radio on February 2nd, 1950. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s. When the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Thank you. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, an episode of Dr. Tim Detective from 1948 and the mystery of guest and number two. But first, here's a five-minute mystery as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Another five-minute mystery.
Right here.
Nothing doing.
Oh, Sheriff! Sheriff, please!
Hey, somebody calling me.
That man there, Henry. Come in this way.
Oh, Sheriff! Oh, gee, I'm mighty glad I found you, sir.
Hey, what's the matter, Rube? Something wrong?
Johnny Clare, the star aerialist over in the Big Top. She was just found murdered in her tent.
Now let's get this straight. Cause of death, strangulation. Grease paint smears on her throat and several small fresh scratches on the palms of her hands. Costume also grease smeared.
Well, what do you say, Sheriff? We can't keep the crowd waiting in the Big Top all day.
As company manager, what do you think? It's kind of upset your show, doesn't it?
Why don't you talk to the voodoo doctor? He was the last one with her.
Might be a good idea. Which one's he?
Well, he's right over there, Sheriff, the one in all the paint.
Ah, so you're the voodoo doctor?
Yes, sir, I am.
What's your name? What do I call you besides voodoo doctor?
Just call me Neil.
Urban here tells me that you might be able to throw some light on the murder of Miss Clare.
Urban, eh? I thought so. Why, you...
No rough stuff, eh? Now talk, Neil. Don't feel like it. Well, Urban, suppose you tell me what you know.
Well, Sheriff, just before the show started, I saw the voodoo doctor sneak away from Dottie's tent.
Dressed just as he is in costume.
Yeah, grease from head to foot. I waited until he passed and then looked into Dottie's tent. She was dead.
And you think that Neil, the voodoo doctor...
killed Dottie? I'm sure of it. I heard him threaten her.
That's a lie. Dottie asked me to come to her tent, but she was dead when I got there.
Did you touch anything?
Not a thing. I'm not so crazy as to leave fingerprints on somebody else's dirty work.
Does everyone in the show use the same grease paint that you have on, Neil?
No, I'm the only one. As a voodoo, I have to paint up like this.
Well, if you and Urban were the only humans to be near the body before she was murdered...
And he's your man, Sheriff.
I don't think so, Urban. I think you're in for a little surprise. You see, I'm holding you for the murder of Dottie Clare.
Why did the sheriff arrest Urban, the show's manager, for the murder of his aerialist? In a moment, we'll hear, but first... Story.
You're crazy, Sheriff. You ain't got one piece of evidence against me.
Haven't I, though? Listen, you claim it was Neil that came out of the tent after Dottie Clare was murdered. Neil's torso and his face and hands are covered with grease paint.
It's all over the dead girl's costume, too, ain't it? What more could you want?
Just something you overlooked, Urban. Anyone struggling with him would have grease paint all over his own hands, too. But the only marks on Dottie's hands were scratches. This is proof enough that Dottie Clare did not struggle with your voodoo man, as you said. And consequently... he couldn't have strangled her. No, Urban. Looks like you slipped up that time. And that slip is going to cost you your life.
Oh.
athlete's foot from spreading through your family. NP27 treatment roots out athlete's foot, penetrates below skin surface where others can't reach, even into toenails. NP27 liquid stops itch, relieves pain, promotes healthy tissue. NP27 powder guards against new infection.
This is Dr. Tim, detective, to bring you, by transcription, the mystery of the guest in number two. Being a combination of doctor and detective gets pretty rugged sometimes, and this was one of those times, all right. The guest in number two, we called him. Jill, that's my landlady's daughter, first called him to my attention.
Mom's your friend in number two. You know, the room up on the second floor. To the doggondest guy.
I remember you thought I was the doggondest guy when I moved in here and set up a laboratory for crime detection and medical work.
Well, but Sandy thinks so too, don't you, Sandy?
Yeah, I think maybe he's a criminal in hiding.
I'm afraid you kids have developed unnatural suspicions from helping me out with some of my cases.
Well, anybody that says his name is Jones, then...
Now, look. Some people really are named Jones. Several hundred thousand of them, I presume, and...
If that's his name, then why are all his suitcases marked with RWM?
Sure, every one of them, stamped in gold letters.
None of our business, kids. Boy, your mother'd skin you alive, Jill, if she knew you were prying into the luggage of a paying customer. And as for you, Master Sandy, it might be smart for you to confine your detective work to your own premises and not in other people's houses, right?
Right.
Oh, okay, I guess. But I still think that it's darn good.
I wish now I'd paid more attention to Sandy and Jill in the matter of the stranger in number two. But you never know until it's too late. Anyway, nothing happened to break the routine of my laboratory week for a couple of weeks. Then, late one afternoon, just before dinner time, I was cleaning up my lab.
Gee, Dr. Tim, you don't mean those jars are full of real blood. Blood from people.
Exactly that, Jill.
What do you do with it?
Oh, a lot of things. Blood's a pretty useful thing. A lot more so than most people realize.
Where do you get it?
From the bank, Jill. The blood bank. And that's just what it actually is. All over the country, these banks keep blood for use whenever and wherever it's needed.
Sure, but what do you do with it?
Well, that's a long story, Sandy. But it amounts to this. For years, doctors have known that blood isn't just one thing. It's lots and lots of things. And each one of those parts or fractions of the blood can be separated from the other parts. And these are used to cure people. I'm trying to find some new blood parts or some new uses for the old ones. That's why there's always blood samples in the laboratory refrigerator, catch?
Uh-huh.
Sure. Well, I'm all cleaned up here at last. Now, what's the news?
Mom said I'd better come up and see you. Mm-hmm. A professional visit, she called it. I don't feel so good today.
Symptoms?
Well, I've been sort of sick at my stomach and my eyes hurt, and I feel all kind of worn out.
Personally, I think she's just trying to get out of doing homework tonight.
I am not.
Well, let me take a look, Jill. I'll stick out your tongue. Say ah. Sandy.
Yes, Dr. Tim.
Hand me that thermometer, will you?
Sure.
Thanks. Here, I'll keep it in your mouth for a while, Jill.
Now, Dr. Tim.
Yes?
You know that guy Jones upstairs?
Oh, I wouldn't say I know him, Sandy. We've spoken in the hall.
Well, I know you told us to lay off, but the doggonest thing happened just a few minutes ago while I was waiting by the stairs for Jill.
Ah, the curse of an overactive imagination. Go on.
Anyway, he came in with this other man right behind him. And Dr. Tim, I'd swear that other guy had a gun in his overcoat pocket, was pushing it right up against this Jones guy's back. They didn't see me.
I didn't have time to laugh because just at that moment, from right overhead, came the sound of a fight. And then something else. A shot. For a moment, we stood there paralyzed. It wasn't until I heard a crash of glass and saw a figure hurtle past my window and streak it over the back fence and up the alley that I could move. And by the time that we reached the upstairs room, it looked as if we'd arrived too late. The mysterious Mr. Jones was lying on the floor with a pool of blood beside him. He'd been shot. Shot right through the back. Looking back on it afterwards, I don't know what I'd have done without those kids. There wasn't anybody else in the house, and if I ever needed six hands, I needed them then. Sick as she was, Jill just gulped and said,
"Holy gee. Is he dead?
He wasn't quite, but it was a matter of moments. Gunshot wounds can be pretty nasty. Where there's loss of blood, you always have shock to contend with. And shock can be mighty serious in itself. Sandy didn't have to be told. In a flash, he was downstairs and back with my medical bag. One word to Jill, the word police, sent her flying to a telephone, and I knew an ambulance and help would be on the way at once. Meantime, the mysterious Mr. Jones was in the hands of God and a doctor. I hoped I was a good doctor, and I remember asking God to help me out on that score. Jones was dying, fast. Then I remembered that blood in my laboratory. Downstairs in the lab, Jill and I worked as we'd never worked before, while Sandy kept watch upstairs over the wounded man. We didn't talk much, Jill and I, just a few quiet questions and answers.
Here's the microscope slide, Dr. Jim. Are you going to give him a transfusion?
Yes. Have to check his type of blood first with a microscope. Use the wrong kind of blood and it would kill him.
Gee.
Good thing I have whole blood on hand for those experiments. He wouldn't last until they could get some here. Now, that solution, please.
Here.
Ah. This one seems to match his blood. Quick, hand me that bottle marked type O. Now, go to the sterilizer. Twenty minutes later, the ambulance arrived. Two squad cars and a dozen or so police were scouring the neighborhood for some trace of the man who had tried to murder the mysterious Mr. Jones. And as for Jones, that blood had saved his life, had replaced the vital fluid, the blood cells, and all the other chemical elements so necessary to keeping the life of a man going. Jones was still unconscious, of course, and would be for a long time yet. His condition was so serious that he couldn't even be moved to a hospital. It would have meant sure death from more loss of blood and shock. The case was out of my hands now, but I'd done my best, and I hoped my best was good enough. I sank down weakly in a chair in my laboratory. And it wasn't until I noticed Sandy and Jill, big-eyed and bursting with excitement, that I remembered the other side of the affair. Who had shot Jones and why? Maybe I could help there, too. But one look at Jill, and I knew her heart was going to be broken. For this was one case where she was going to be out of the running. I spoke quietly. Jill.
Yes, Dr. Kim?
You're going to bed.
Oh, Dr. Kim!
Hate to do it to you, old girl, but you remember that little examination we were making?
Oh, well, yes, but...
As your doctor, madam, I order you to bed. You have measles. A few minutes later, the house had two bed patients. One, a very sad young lady with measles. The other, a man nobody knew, who had almost been murdered. A third patient, Sandy, was standing up bravely under a light, while I stood over him with a hypodermic syringe.
What's the stuff, Doc?
Well, believe it or not, Sandy, it comes from blood, too. It's going to keep you from catching Jill's measles, or at least it'll make certain that you have a very light case and protect you for a long time afterwards.
What do you call it?
Immune serum globulin.
Well, let's skip that one, huh?
Well, you see, this stuff is one of those blood parts, fractions, I was telling you about. When you take blood from people who have had measles and separate it into its parts, this globulin...
Hey, how do you spell that one?
Well, G-L-O-B-U-L-I-N. It works wonders to keep people from getting measles from other people.
I'll take your word for it, Doc. Go ahead and shoot.
Okay.
I didn't even feel it. Am I safe now?
Perfectly safe.
Dr. Kim.
Yes?
You know, I've been watching that guy, Jones, the one who was shot. I can tell you something about him.
What?
He's loony. You know what he does?
No.
He collects rocks, believe it or not. Just common old rocks.
Well, that's a harmless pastime.
Sure got him in a mess of trouble.
Maybe you've got a point there, Sandy. But why would anybody shoot a man for collecting rocks? Unless they were gold or something.
Whoever shot him was after those rocks, all right. When you left me alone with Mr. Jones in the room upstairs, I sort of noticed that several of his suitcases had been busted open. There were rocks with labels on them scattered all over the room. I'd sure like to know why.
It must have been midnight when I decided I couldn't get to sleep and might as well do a little looking around. After what we'd all been through, I wanted to forget the mystery and relax. The police could carry on from here. But I couldn't. So I went up the stairs to where the mysterious Mr. Jones hovered between life and death. I motioned the nurse to be silent and carefully examined the room. Sandy was right. There was nothing of interest except the rocks. There were hundreds of them, all sizes and all shapes, and all neatly labeled with cryptic little stickers which said Northwest 100A or South G8, referring no doubt to some location on a map where they had been gathered. I took a couple with me to examine at leisure in the laboratory and started downstairs when I noticed a light coming from under the door to Jill's room.
Come in.
Well, sort of late for a sick girl to be reading, isn't it?
Oh, honest, I've been asleep.
Well, it's lights out now. Doctor's orders.
Okay, Doctor. How's Mr. Jones? Is he going to live?
I wish I could tell you, Jill. The use of blood has given him a chance. First the transfusion, then later maybe he'll need plasma.
What's that?
Oh, plasma's another part of blood, Jill. It can be stored indefinitely and won't spoil as quickly as whole blood. You use it when you don't need the red cells of the blood, just the liquid part.
Gee, blood is sure wonderful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, Dr. Jill, what are you doing with those rocks in your hand?
Oh, these? Well, they're from Mr. Jones' room. Seems to be a lot of them up there.
Are they anything special?
I don't know, Jill. Sandy mentioned them, and I thought...
Gee whiz. I'll bet I know what they are. I was reading in the paper tonight. Everybody's out looking for them.
For what?
Well, gosh, I forget what you call it. But prospectors go out with some kind of electric machines, and they...
I just stood there with my mouth hanging open. What a dope I'd been. It took two kids to tell me what I should have seen from the very first moment. Without even saying goodnight to Jill, I dashed down the stairs, picked up the telephone, and called the Federal Bureau of Investigation. This was a case for the G-Man. It took a couple of weeks before the case was cleared up. My hunch, thanks to the work of Sandy and Jill, had been right. Jones had been prospecting for uranium, the vital mineral for atomic energy and research. Jones told us the whole story later, how he was prospecting for the government, which badly needed new supplies of uranium, how he'd been forced at the point of a gun to give up his map and then brutally shot. The G-men caught the man all right, but never gave out the whole story of who was behind the robbery and the attempted murder. But it wasn't anyone working for the good of this country. Jones had really found uranium, too. And the mine is being worked today, thanks to Sandy, to Jill, and to a mysterious substance known for thousands and thousands of years as blood. This is Dr. Tim Detective, saying so long until next week at this same time, when Sandy, Jill, and I will dip into my casebook and bring out a brand new transcribed story, The Mystery of the Man from Trouble Creek.
Bottom at the top.
We need it.
Oh, help on it.
Well, you could use a little help.
No help on it.
Just call on me if you need a little help.
We need any help. We need any help.
I can handle this job all by myself. Sweet as sugar, I'm gonna buy her diamond ring, and we'll get married in the spring.
Do you need any help?
No help on it.
Can you use a little help?
No help on it.
Just call on me if you need a little help.
Do you need any help? Do you need any help?
Oh, I can handle this job all by myself. Well, she called.
thingamajiggy. Every time I ask her for a kiss, I can hear the voice sound something like this.
Need a little help.
Oh, help on this.
Can't you use a little help?
No help on this.
Just call on me if you need a little help.
Need a little help. Need a little help.
I can handle this job all by myself. Tonight. And we're gonna do everything upright. When the music starts, we'll swing and sway. We're gonna dance till the break of day. No help on it.
You could use a little help.
Oh, help on it.
Just call on me if you need a little help.
Do you need any help? Do you need any help?
I can handle this job all by myself.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY. The Carlisles, featuring Bill Carlisle and guitarist Chet Atkins with No Help Wanted from 1952. We also enjoyed an episode of Dr. Tim Detective from 1948. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at this same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.